This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
216-474-0092. Let's get down and dirty, though, on a team that is absolutely perfect to start the season. And the man that knows it all, the guy that we trust when it comes to Cavalier coverage, at least in the next 12 or 13 minutes, that has to be Chris Fedor from Cleveland.com. And the Plain Dealer. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Christopher.
Good afternoon, guys. I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. How was your flight? You just got back from New York?
Yeah, I just landed about 40 minutes ago. Flight was nice and smooth, nice and easy. I got the first class upgrade, so I don't hate that. You know.
Wow.
When you travel as much as I do, there are certainly perks to the job. And Marriott points are one of them, and flight status is another one. It's the little things in life that make me happy.
Chris, outstanding. This is why I like you and why I trust you. Other reporters would try to hide behind that. They would just say, I'm just not like, I mean, just be average Joe. But you are willing to share and share the good times with us. And that is why I appreciate you. I just want you to know that.
You know, one of my old mentors told me a long time ago that doing radio is just talking about life. So here I am talking about life.
So good.
That's heavy.
So good.
That's heavy. So you make a move. You move on from a defensive-minded head coach who did a great job here and brought the team along one step every year, it seemed. Replaced him with an offensive-minded coach. And through four games, the Cavaliers are the second highest scoring team in the NBA. They lead the NBA in field goal percentage. They're second in three-point percentage, all while not shooting a whole lot. 22nd in field goals attempted and 18th in threes attempted. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's what they wanted when they went with Kenny Atkinson, right? Usually when you make a change in coach, you're looking for somebody who is the antithesis of the previous guy. If you go back to the Cavs following the loss in the playoffs against the Knicks 2 years ago, you know, decision makers in this organization sat down with J.B. Bickerstaff, and I don't want to say they gave him an ultimatum, but they told him, you need to make this offense more dynamic. You need to make this offense more creative. You need to make this offense less predictable. And there were points during last season that the offense was humming along and they were shooting threes and they were playing a modern style and they were getting the ball up and down the floor and they were playing with spacing and all that kind of stuff. But once they got into a playoff environment again, and look, part of it is they didn't have Jared Allen for eight of the games of the playoffs. They didn't have Donovan Mitchell for the last couple against Boston. But when they got into that playoff environment again, and things were really, really difficult, and it was a half-court game, and it was about strategies, and it was about schemes, and it was about execution. You know, the Cavs once again had a limited offense, a flawed offense that was exposed in a playoff environment. So they went out, and they got Kenny Atkinson because they want things to be different. They don't want to go away from the defense-first team that they are. They don't want to go away from the identity that they created that was so successful for the last 4 years. But they want to enhance this team, and they want it to take the next step. And the only way that they were going to be able to do that, guys, is to create an offense that was one that would complement the stingy defense that they already had. And in the first four games, it's a small sample size, obviously, but in the first four games, you're seeing signs of that.
So I know this is kind of a simpleton question, but and I know they're 4-0 and they haven't lost, so everything feels good right now. But can you feel like a vibe change? And I'm not trying. You know what I'm saying? Like, are the players totally bought into what they're doing right now? And can you feel a difference of even just confidence from these? Because like when I watch Evan Mobley, I think, all right, I'm seeing more confidence than I've seen before, and I like the way he's playing the game, and I like the aggressive play that he's. Can you see that? I mean, you're around it 24/7, so.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, guys. And Donovan was asked about it following the game last night, and Darius was asked about it following the game last night. And players have been asked about it over the last week. Like, is it too soon to say that we're seeing the influence of Kenny Atkinson on this basketball team? And all of the guys said, no, it's not too soon. You can see it. You can feel it. And I think the thing that stands out to me is that there is a belief in this coach that he's going to do the things that make this offense great. When they get Max Strus back, they should go to a different level, right? When they get more time together with these rotations and these lineups, when Evan Mobley gets more comfortable being used the way that he's being used right now, which is different from early in his career in the NBA, when that all comes together, there is a strong belief that the Cavs are going to be really, really dynamic and really, really forward-thinking on the offensive end of the floor, where, you know, if defenses start to try and take away some of the stuff that they want to do, similar to what happened against the Knicks 2 years ago and last year against the Magic, that they have a coach, they have an X's and O's coach that is going to be prepared for that. He's going to make the adjustments, and he's going to do it quickly, and he's going to have more answers than the previous one on the offensive end of the floor.
Kenny had talked about playing 9-10 deep, and so far, what, 10 guys are averaging at least 14 minutes a game? So that's mission accomplished so far. Do you like that?
Yeah, I do, because I think they have playable depth. That's what it comes down to. You know, there were various points last year, guys, where J.B. Bickerstaff didn't have 10 or 11 guys that he felt comfortable and confident to go to.
Might not have had seven on certain nights.
Yeah, I mean, because they just weren't performing well enough to get those minutes or to get that trust from the coaching staff. This is a little bit different, right? Ty Jerome is an NBA backup point guard, and Kenny Atkinson went away from him in the second half against New York, but in the first three games, he was giving them quality minutes. He was stabilizing that second unit. He was big in that second quarter turnaround against Detroit in the home opener. So when he's playing that kind of basketball, it takes pressure off Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell. They don't have to play as many minutes. They don't have to be reliant on creating offense and being the primary playmakers and all those different things. And maybe it's not a huge deal right now in October because Kenny Atkinson's still working through it. And he's still trying to figure out what works, what doesn't work, what lineups don't work, all those different things. But I think that the way that Donovan, the load that Donovan had to carry last year for a variety of reasons that obviously took a toll on him, and the load that Jared Allen had to carry at various points last season, again, for a variety of reasons, that took a toll on him. And this team physically wasn't in the place that they were hoping to be at going into the playoffs, where they felt like they could give their best, where they felt like they could give their best shot to the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference semifinals. And the hope is that if you don't run these guys into the ground, and if you don't demand so much of them in the regular season, that when the playoffs roll around, they're going to be in a different place, both physically and mentally. And if the Cavs can get to that point, then maybe it can be a different outcome in the playoffs this year.
Chris, I thought it was interesting. Coach last night talked about schedule. Schedule's going to get tougher. I do think, though, when you look at the big picture of the schedule, yes, they have Boston twice before Christmas, but they don't have a ton of travel before that. You know, you've got one long trip to Miami's like the longest flight before until after Christmas when they go off to Denver. So two-part question then. You know, obviously the schedule is going to get a little bit tougher because they played some of these teams, but the wear and tear road travel doesn't seem severe until you get to Christmas, after Christmas.
That's certainly part of it. I will say this. The beginning of the schedule was not favorable from that standpoint for the Cavs. It was favorable in terms of the teams that they played against, right?
Yes,
they were
right.
Given figurative layups against Toronto, Detroit, and Washington, some of the dregs of the NBA. But
right.
Three games in four nights, three of those on the road,
true.
Tough way to open. And I feel like because Kenny was willing to rely on his depth and expand his rotation, and because the Cavs did what they were supposed to do against the lesser opponents, take care of business in the first three quarters, and then they don't have to play their guys in the fourth quarter, right? The game's out of hand. The game's decided already. So if they can capitalize on those opportunities throughout this schedule, once they get through what is a gauntlet week for them against Los Angeles and Orlando and Milwaukee twice, you know, when you play against the worst of the worst and you're considered a championship contender and that's how the Cavs view themselves, then make it so that you don't have to play your guys in the fourth quarter. That's what Boston does all the time. That's what Golden State did when they were winning championships. That's what the Cavs did when they were getting to the finals four straight years. Those things add up throughout the course of the season, and it was nice to see from the Cavs' perspective, you know, they didn't have to play their guys in the fourth quarter against Washington. They didn't have to do it in the opener against Toronto. Those things matter. Those things accumulate over the course of the year. And if the Cavs can continue to do that and rely on their depth to take them home and build leads and not give up leads and stuff like that, it's going to be really, really beneficial for them.
Chris Fedor joining us from the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Chris does a great job covering the Cavaliers all season long. Is the lack of an abundance of tall guys a concern, or does the style of offense maybe alleviate some of that?
I'll say this. I mean, I think there are certain teams, guys, that will show up more against than others. They certainly haven't run into those teams yet.
No.
But, I mean, the way that this team is constructed, they have the pieces that they have, and they have to find ways to work around that the best that they can. Are they Boston, loaded with all-star caliber wings? No, they're not. But not a lot of teams have the front court size to match up with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, and the skill and the quickness and the athleticism to match up with those guys. So I definitely think there's some give and take. And I think there are some things that J.B. Bickerstaff had to do to try and work around those limitations. And I think there are things that Kenny's going to have to do to work around those limitations. In saying that, you know, putting Dean Wade, 6'9", 6'10", as the small forward on this team certainly changes the dynamic. And it changes the look. And it changes some of the matchups and stuff like that. I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to be the starting small forward the rest of the way. But it gives the Cavs a different look that they can see right now, and if it works out well, it's one that they can go to in certain matchups and things like that.
Chris, your thoughts on the James family reunion that's about to happen?
I think it is so special. For all the things that people want to say about Bronny and the kind of player that he's going to be into the future and all of the reasons why he's in Los Angeles, basically rigging the draft so that he went 55th overall. For him to share the court with LeBron on opening night and check in at the same time with LeBron is so special. And for them now to be preparing for Wednesday night, being back in Cleveland, where LeBron started his career, 45 minutes from where Bronny was born, he walked those halls. He was in those locker rooms. He was on that court after games taking shots and stuff. Like, I can't even imagine the emotions that are going to be pouring out of everybody in the James family and everybody around their circle, because it is a once-in-a-lifetime event, and it's going to be really, really cool Wednesday night when they check in at the same time or they share the floor at the same time. And I'm just really, really happy that people, hopefully, can start to see the bigger picture of what all of this is about. And for LeBron, who has given so much to the NBA, and he's sacrificed so much, and he's given up so much of his time, and he's missed so many things, to become the player that he is right now, to have the reward of playing alongside his son, and then doing it in Cleveland at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, that is going to be so, so special. And I love the fact that it's going to happen tomorrow night. And I can't wait to see what the emotions are going to be like for the entire James family. It's crazy to think about Bronny and all the time that he spent in that building as a young kid. And now seeing him as an NBA player alongside LeBron, it's just, you know, it's mind-boggling and it's super special for everybody involved.
So Jeff and I were talking before the show about Bronny's future. So it sounds like he's going to stay on this trip and then probably head back to the G League. Does that sound like what you're – and he hasn't seen a whole lot of time since that first game, so we're kind of hoping 3 minutes.
No time since the first game.
Yeah, so we're kind of – we're hoping that they will –
oh, they got a plan.
Yeah, I mean, I
got
to believe they plan too. I mean, I think back to all those great games he had at Old Trail. Oh, wait a minute, no, just kidding about that. But they got to play.
No, you're not kidding. He did.
Did you ever see him play at Old Trail?
No, I did.
I was
not.
About to say all that seventh grade buzzer beater he won to win the championship. And he said, "Old Trail, this one's for you."
Yes, he played lacrosse too there.
No, I just he will play, right? I mean, fans going, and I'm assuming Bronny's going to get a giant. He'll get an ovation too, right? I mean, he'll get right?
I hope he doesn't get a video tribute.
I don't know what that would entail. Maybe him in the back seat of the car for the parade when everybody was scorching in the sun and sweating and nobody had bottles of water and stuff like that.
That's true.
Maybe that'll be part of it. But look. You know, when they drafted Bronny, they had a plan for opening night. They executed it the way that they wanted to, where both of them were standing at the scorer's table and they entered at the same time. You better believe that they understand the big picture, and you better believe that they understand the moment of Wednesday night. And they have an idea. J.J. Redick has an idea, and he's going to carry it out in some kind of way so that they share the floor at the same time at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Because this... For LeBron and Bronny, besides the opening night, this is as big as it gets to have it happen here in Cleveland. And he's going to play, and then after that, yes, guys, I do believe the plan is to send him to the G League. Because when you're the 55th overall pick in the draft, and you're on a team like the Lakers, with that level of history and with playoff aspirations, you don't play big minutes. Right?
No.
You go to the G League and you develop away from the cameras, out of the spotlight, and you do the things that you need to do from a development standpoint to maybe possibly work your way into becoming an NBA rotation player. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if he has that level of skill to become that in his career. And that's why he's going to spend a majority of this season in the G League trying to show and learn all the things that he needs to learn to become that kind of player, possibly.
And Chris, whether he has a great, bad, whatever NBA career, thank God he's alive. You know, I mean, everything he went through, just thank goodness.
Yeah. And whether he becomes like a really, really talented NBA player or a big part of the Lakers' future, he's always going to have October 23rd and he's always going to have October 30th. And those are memories that are going to last a lifetime.
Chris, as always, we love your perspective. Thank you so much. And we'll be reading you on theplaindealercleveland.com all the time, my friend. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
All right. Chris Fedor was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Time for a 2020 with Andrew Hody.
I think somebody made a cameo on that this morning.
Jeff, I've got to be honest. I want to get back into the NBA talk here. But Hody, yes, you have a second. Were you drawn into the Emerging podcast this morning for some reason?
Yeah, I was drawn in, actually.
Okay, what is the story? And were you trying to ridicule the current show that you're on while you're on there?
Yeah, nice job.
Oh, absolutely not. I just said how I wasn't afraid of
the show. Who would ask if you were afraid of me?
Oh, Lima asked me.
No, that's just him poking the bear. You know that, right?
I figured there had to be a Lima Baskin rivalry, right?
Dan and I are afraid of him. Dan and I are afraid of
him. Dan is not afraid of anything. Dan is the bear. He is not scared.
I'm actually afraid of Menigan, though.
Well, you should be.
Can you kind of tell us what's in the podcast that you were discussing then? I mean,
it's called a tease, Andrew. Here you go.
Let's just tease that I was talking about, let's just say, the hash brown incident that took place earlier this morning.
The one where there were, like, how many were sitting there, Jeff? Six?
17.
So there were, like, okay, there were 17.
Nah, there was six. Andy's
okay, there
right.
were six, and you grabbed five of them and said, here's one more left for anybody else. Is this true or false?
That is not exactly what I said. Right, I said, does
exactly
anybody want any?
Here.
And you perceived it as though I was going to just eat all of them.
Well, you had them all in your hand as if you had the look of...
And ran out. ran out of the room.
There was a scurry.
You look like a lion that hadn't eaten in about 4 days.
Yeah. Well, I gave one to Jeff Thomas. I just want to emphasize that.
I had to tell you to ask Jeff Thomas if he was hungry.
So maybe it did, but I was asking everybody in the room first if they wanted one. Lima was still in there, so I'm sure Lima would say yes to it.
I'll vouch for that. He did ask for you. He did say... He said, you guys don't want these, do you? As he stuck them under his arm.
Well, Dan and I
didn't stick them under my arm. Now.
It was very Newman scurrying out of the apartment.
It was very Newman. That is an excellent point. That's why Dan's the man. And that's why you should be intimidated and scared by him.
Howdy.
Do you understand such references, or are we over your head again?
I'm well aware who Newman is. I
appreciate such things.
Oh, you do watch Seinfeld?
Yes, I do.
Okay, we just want to make sure you're up with common times here.
What else do you watch, Howdy?
If it was 1990.
I watch Family Guy and It's Always Sunny quite frequently.
That was a cue for you to give me a giggity.
Giggity, giggity, giggity. Thank I was you. Quagmire for Halloween, by the way.
He was,
actually. Did you see his picture? Yeah, I did see that. Is that on your...
He didn't shave his beard, though. He should have.
Yeah, that was kind of silly.
What? Yep. I do have a butt chin, so it might have worked out well, but...
Where can people see that picture if they need to know? I mean, your fans already know, but I'm just curious.
They could see it on my
Instagram.
Your listeners
know where to find them. And what is
and
your
maybe
Instagram?
My ex. Hody Andrew on X, ahody8900 on Instagram. But actually, you have to follow me in order to see it.
All right, well, follow him, I'm telling you. You had
hot chicks in the picture with him.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize
that. I don't know how much you paid them, but...
Woo-wee! All right, let's go back to the Cavs here for a second. Are you looking forward to Bronny and LeBron playing?
No.
You're not? I knew we would go straight to the heart of this thing.
No. I've made my thoughts on Bronny really clear. I'm really... Thank God the poor kid is alive and able to play basketball again and function, and that they found things without something catastrophic happening. I mean, and in all seriousness, now the young guy needs to go figure out how to play the game at maybe an NBA level, and I hope he has a great career. But it doesn't do anything for me personally. You know, we all owe LeBron a lot of great memories here, and I thank him for that. That was phenomenal. And I'm stunned that he's still going as strong as he is at the age that he is. And he's a freak of nature and one of the best basketball players to ever live on this planet. And I'm assuming other planets as well. But
I don't know. Have you seen that team out of Mars?
But the idea of the idea, it doesn't do anything for me. You know, it's Chris said it well. Clearly, the Lakers wanted to do this for LeBron, so they orchestrated getting him in the draft. They orchestrated him playing in a game. They orchestrated him playing tomorrow night, I'm sure. And then I hope, Andy, send him to the G League and develop him and see if he has a chance to play in the league.
I wonder about the pressure on him.
I think it's got to be monumental. Unless he's completely unfazed by it. I mean, you're LeBron James' kid. You were Michael Jordan's kid. You're not as good as those guys. Nobody is. You know? I mean,
yeah, most scenarios, it's the other way around. Like, the parent wants their kid to be better than them.
Yeah, but they're just not. And Bronny's, what, 6'2", 6'1"? He's a very different type of player than LeBron. He might be able to develop into a scrappy rotational guy who can come off an NBA bench for a decade. I hope he can. And if he can do anything more than that, God bless him. That'd be great. But, I mean, clearly, you know, everybody here was giddy when LeBron came out and became a Cavalier and hated it when he left and loved it when he came back and didn't like it when he left again. But, man, you can't do anything but admire what he's been able to do in his career from a basketball standpoint. And Andy... No off-court issues, no anything, nothing but a terrific ambassador for the NBA. You know, you don't have to like him, but boy, you sure have to appreciate him.
I didn't really even ask you, what do you think of the Cavs start here? I mean, I know that we've talked about the fact that, you know, when you get Toronto, Detroit, and Washington out of the gate,
that was a good
way to start.
You better smash those teams, and the Cavs won those games. So that's really good.
I was impressed with last night's win, especially because I don't think that they played particularly well early on. And then Darius said, I'm taking this thing over, which is okay, because I think do you not think the way this team's set up that it doesn't have to be the same guy every night?
Well, that's an interesting point, and I think it's an accurate point. And there are several things that have happened through four games, but the last night is the game you have to look at more than any, I think, because it was a quality opponent. And you have numerous scoring options. You have depth. I have always loved the idea of an NBA team playing more than an 8 or 9 man rotation. You know, most teams play 9 in the regular season. Cavs might be able to go 10 or 11, especially when Max Strus comes back. You're not going to play 11. That's tough to do. Right now, Isaac Okoro looks like he might be the odd man out if, you know, if Max Strus were to come back, because Kenny Atkinson is favoring offense over defense. But they've got some scoring numbers that I mentioned to Fedor that are pretty impressive right now.
Let me leave you this as we go to break, and we'll come back. We're going to talk baseball, and Greg Williams is going to join us in the next hour. I can't wait to talk to him. You've had four different games, and you've had four different leading scorers in every one of those games. 216-474-0092, Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.
And Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge, who destroyed our team. Not destroying the Dodgers right now, are they?
No.
That baseball is a weird game, Andy. You know, it takes 162 to get there and then 3 to have your dreams go south. And that's kind of what it's sitting at right now. Obviously unlikely that the Yankees come back to win 4 straight. It's been done, but unlikely.
Sure. I mean, they can always, you know, feel good about the fact that not only, you know, did they win the East, but they won the Central too. So, right? They should feel good about that. No? They won the Central in the playoffs. Kind of a joke there. Whatever.
I see what you mean.
Thanks. Dan, your thoughts. Just give me your overall feeling on the series so far.
It's been a bummer that the Yanks haven't been able to actually get their bats going a little bit. It turns out that everybody has realized that Aaron Judge will swing and miss at sliders away, and so they are continuing to do sliders low and away again and again and again.
How did the American League not figure that out all year?
Well, probably because at some point...
Because he wasn't doing it then.
He wasn't swinging and missing at them, yeah. And now he's swinging and missing at fastballs that are right in his wheelhouse because he's waiting for the sliders low and away. You know, it kind of happens every so often in baseball. You just get into these funks. And Giancarlo Stanton has cooled off to this point, too, which has something to do with it. Soto's playing real well. Gleyber's playing really well for him, too. But, I mean, they're just not pushing runs across the board. And you tip your cap to the Dodgers, and they're starting pitching in their bullpen. I mean, Flaherty was really good. Walker Buehler was really good. The pen's been nails with Brewster Gratterall coming back and just
and
mowing people down.
Everybody was complaining about the Dodger pitching, especially the starting. Oh, they don't have the starting pitching. Oh, blah, 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 blah.
The pen, because everybody was hurt. I mean, the Dodgers' IL at one point was just out of control with guys on it. And they've seemed to get in. Freddie Freeman can't miss right now. And
yep.
Mookie Betts is playing well, and you can kind of see where this all builds together. Tommy Edman playing his tail off.
I kind of felt last night for a second that the Yankees were going to get some of that Guardians magic in the ninth when Verdugo hit the home run.
Yeah.
The two-run shot, and you're like...
You said Verdugo.
No, I said Verdugo.
Oh, I thought you said Vertigo.
No, you must be spinning over there.
He made me dizzy when he hit it, Andy.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Thank you.
I thought for a moment, I'm like, man, if they come back and tie this thing up in the ninth, I was like, wow, that would be very reminiscent of what we saw in the American League Central, American League Championship Series. Sorry,
scary when they did.
It was close. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit bored with what's going on with this. Other than Freeman,
what do you mean bored?
I'm a little bit bored.
It was three games. How can you be bored?
I kind of want the Yankees to come back and then get their hopes and dreams crushed in Game 7. I think it's more fun that way.
See, I'm torn because I want more baseball, but I also want Juan Soto to be so miserable that he takes off and leaves the Yankees, and that would be wonderful. That would be the best thing that can happen. So
that
I'm
would
like
be
really
kind of
torn because I want more baseball, but Juan Soto leaving is awesome.
No, no one in this room is rooting for the Yankees, right? No one's rooting for the Yankees. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
I'm not rooting against them. I'm not overly rooting for the Dodgers. I'm just kind of rooting for baseball.
You mean the game or actual games?
Just the game. I'd like to see a good series because it's good for the sport. And you've got two of the marquee franchises in professional sports going at it, not just baseball. And if it doesn't go 6 or 7, that's just like...
Would a New York-New York series have been better?
No.
Dan?
I mean, if the Yankees aren't going to hit here, what makes you think they're going to hit Senga and that whole group.
Well, because they get to sleep in their own bed at night. I don't know. I'm just trying to throw ideas out at you, you know?
Look, this is the way that this World Series goes. And look, New York could win the next two, and I don't think any of us would be totally shocked. If all of a sudden Judge comes out and cranks two bombs, and all of a sudden we're having a completely different conversation. I mean, it would not surprise any of us. There's a reason why the guy's going to win the MVP this year. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. He could easily go in the cage. They could go, hey, your swing's getting a little long. Tighten that up a smidge and stop swinging at sliders low and away. And he go, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that sounds good. Takes a couple walks, gets a fastball, and now we're having a different conversation. I mean, that's the thing with this whole sport. It can flip so fast. We could be heading back to L.A. in a completely different situation. You know, this could be 3-1 heading back to L.A.
So MLB.com put out a story talking about how young fans are driving the massive viewership for games in the World Series right now. I'm just curious both of you. Plus, I mean, game two, 15.9 million viewers in Japan. It was the most watched MLB postseason game ever in that country.
Doesn't surprise you, does it?
No, not at all. And the fact that he was able to even play... After it didn't look like he was going to play. That slide, look, I was like, hey, I think he's done.
He looked like he was done. Yeah.
I don't know. What's that say about that makes him just even more of a legend, I think.
Oh, I mean, I'm not going to go that far.
What do you think, Dan? He's a legend. He's definitely a legend in Japan.
Oh, well, without question.
Yeah.
Oh,
he was before he got here, really.
All right, you ready? Zoom in on Jeff when I say this. He might be the greatest baseball player I've ever seen.
Oh.
Jeff?
I mean, let's put this all together. Like I've never seen.
It was the when you said he was better than Babe Ruth. That's the one that made me go.
I've ever seen.
The way you quantified it by saying the best I've ever seen, I could see that.
Yeah, I wasn't alive at that point.
Dude can flat out hit, man, and he's got a big time arm.
Yeah, I want to see what he looks like when he comes back.
Second Tommy John is never easy, but it looked good for Walker Buehler last night.
Yeah, I want to see what he looks like coming back. I want to see if even he's, 85% of what he was pitching. Yeah. I mean, that would be absolutely insane. I mean, just, like, there was a year, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. I think it was 2019, where you could have argued that he could have won the Cy Young on top of the MVP. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, when he was on throwing, it was unbelievable.
I'm having this Babe Ruth conundrum, ethical conundrum. I mean,
he would tell you to eat a hot dog.
Probably.
Drink some beer.
Maybe two.
I mean, he can hit home runs. You know, his impact on the game was unbelievable.
It's legendary. He's turned into John Henry. Like, we're talking about him like he's Paul Bunyan. Like, that's the way people look at this. He's
talking about
Ohtani, legend.
Right? Huh? You're talking about Ohtani or are you talking about Ruth?
No, I'm talking Babe Ruth.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, Babe Ruth is an urban legend at this point. I mean,
he's not an urban legend. He happened.
It happened.
In the same way that, like, Andre the Giant stories have become urban legend. Like, Babe Ruth stories are the same way. You hear them and you're like, this can't possibly be true. Like, that's where it's become in pop culture, in literature, in everything with Babe Ruth. I mean, it's unbelievable how much of an impact he has.
All right. A little bit of blasphemy here. And I'm just, this is just okay. For conversation.
There we go.
Okay. How much of it is determined by, I mean, you can only play against the guys who are still in the league at the time, right? Right?
Well, that makes sense. I don't know if Ohtani Ruth showdown's going to ever happen.
Right. I don't think so. But maybe I bet AI could make it happen.
We could try. Call Dr. Frankenstein.
I wonder how is pitching now compared to pitching then is one thing. And then, you know, you put the New York impact on it, and it becomes even bigger. I'm not questioning whether. The dude at the end of the day, for somebody who loves candy, I mean, he's got a candy bar after him. To me, that's better than a statue.
That's pretty good, yeah.
You know, so I get it, but I always wonder, like, when we try to compare eras, or we try to do the Jordan LeBron argument. We try to do some of those things, and you know, if someone wants to say that they think that someone from this era is better than Babe Ruth because they saw him in person, I used to cringe when I would hear stuff like that. Now I don't. I don't because, you in some ways, you can only kind of judge things somewhat based on what you've seen. Like, to me, and I think, you know, when we talk about great football players, we talk about Jim Brown, right? Like, that's a Cleveland slam dunk. if you want to make the argument that he's the greatest football player to ever live. Because you're from here, you've got passion behind it, and you want to root for the guy that wears that uniform of the team that you love, absolutely. I'm not belittling Babe Ruth's history or legendary status or what he was able to do in the game. I just always wonder when we have these conversations, like, if you want to compare Ohtani to Ruth, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I'll listen to that. I don't know that you'll win the argument, but at least I'll listen to it.
A lot fewer teams. I mean, you can't really compare, but you can be sure.
Playoff structure different.
You can be sure if Babe Ruth played in the game today, he could hit. And you could be sure if Roy Campanella played in the game today, Roy could catch and hit. If Satchel Paige had been able to play the game even long before he did, if you could bring him back, he could pitch.
I also wonder how will we look at today's pitchers down the road too, especially if the game continues to shorten starts, right? If starters aren't going five innings anymore, and we don't care about wins and losses for pitchers, which, to be honest, doesn't really matter. How will we compare today's pitcher to guys like Nolan Ryan, guys that could consider Bob Feller, guys that could go out there and pitch nine all the time? And not even blink.
Yeah, if you ever look at like complete game stats of Bob Feller, it's silly.
Because I was reading something the other day that they were thinking about tweaking the game again, or that someone threw out the idea of having starting pitchers in Major League Baseball have to go six innings or 100 pitches as another rule that they want to influence the game on. I'm already like, okay, bigger bases are okay. I don't mind the clock anymore. At first I was kind of like, I don't know about this. I actually don't like...
You don't notice a lot of things.
I don't like the three-batter rule for relievers. I can't stand that. It drives me nuts.
Oftentimes, you don't notice it, though.
But you really notice it in the playoffs.
Yes, you do.
When your guy is struggling and going up in flames. Does that make the game better?
I think they've junked it up too much, personally.
Dan?
I love it. I'm fine with it. We sit in this world where we're going, well, the supercomputer is spitting out these things and these managers aren't making decisions. Well, now you have costly decisions.
Yeah.
You really have, when you make that move to the pen and it's not good, you have to live with those repercussions for a period of time. You can't just solve them immediately.
All right. So I just quickly want to ask this question. Maybe we'll talk about this at a later date. Would you be in favor of a rule that said starters have to go six innings or 100 pitches?
No.
Jeff?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. I thought it was interesting when somebody wrote it, and I was like, I hate that rule.
It's a good way to ruin arms.
For injury. That was the biggest reason I thought that, too. We're going to do a little NFL rapid fire. We're going to talk to Greg Williams and so much more. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.